Today's conversation is with Louise Glendon from Click Love Grow. She came to me through an entrepreneurial group that we're in, and I had no choice but to have her on when she wrote to me and explained that she had been in the military and then ran a boudoir photography business. I was just so intrigued, I had to get her on. And what I didn't expect was this really bright, bubbly, optimistic, incredibly infectious person to be on the other end of the call. And so I'm really excited about this interview. She gets really raw and honest and pushes her own boundaries. And there's nothing more I can say, but I hope you enjoy Louise Glendon. Welcome to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Every week, join me and my rad guests for tips and tricks for your entrepreneurial journey, incredible stories, real conversations, and takeaways to implement into your life to create positive change. Ready for a rad and real life and biz? Let's get our freak on. So what I want to know is basically your story that got you to where you are right now.
Okay, so at the moment, so I'm an entrepreneur and I run online photography courses, and they're very much aimed at women. So I feel really excited and lucky that I've ended up in this, you know, place where I predominantly work with women and what I do is very feminine. But I think one of the reasons I ended up in this place is because when I was 18, I joined the military. So I was a Tassie girl, and a lot of Tasmanians are desperate to get off the island. So joining the military was a really good option. And so I went to the Defence Academy. I was in the Air Force, and I ended up being in the military for 13 years total. Yeah. And so in that time, I did really love my job. So I was a bit of a, wanted to do really well, and I was a bit of a goody two shoes. And, I loved the structure of the military, and I'd always wanted to go to boarding school. So off I went to the military instead. But no, I was really lucky. And I used to work, one of the first jobs I had was working with the C-130s and with transport aircraft in the RAF. And that was one of the funnest jobs that I had, because we responded a lot to natural disasters. So, the aircraft and the teams that we supported would always be on call to go and support things, you know, like earthquakes in Pakistan and the Bali bombings, the repatriations, assisting Australians whenever something like that happened. And, of course, the tsunamis in Southeast Asia as well. So there was always lots going on, lots that we were training for.
Interesting, because I kind of, I guess the military, when you think of the military, you think of war, you know, you don't necessarily think of like humanitarian efforts. Interesting.
No, it is true. And to be honest, most of the jobs that I was involved in, even as an intelligence analyst, and the support that we provided was very much focused on adversary weapon systems and having a really good understanding of threat systems against our militaries overseas. The majority of the work that I ended up doing in quite a few different roles was always, or a lot of it was around either humanitarian support and supporting teams that were structured to go in to do that emergency response. And so the military does in fact do a lot of things like that, training for it, being prepared for it, you know, on all different fronts. Yeah. But that's an interesting point that people just assume, oh, they're in Iraq, they're in Afghanistan. Whereas, you know, there's lots of things that go on a day-to-day basis that is more the civil humanitarian relief type things. But in saying that, I did deploy overseas to the Middle East when our aircraft were based in Iraq. And so one of the other sides of the jobs, as I said, was I had to be really familiar with weapon systems and threat systems and, you know, all the operating techniques and what was going on basically with all the insurgents on the ground and how they were targeting our aircraft and that kind of thing. So that was, you know, I was pretty young then.
Yeah.
And not necessarily like a weapons nerd.
Yeah.
So it didn't really come naturally to be so familiar with, you know, all these weapon systems and how they're being used. But when you're in that scenario and you're supporting a team and you're part of a team, then, you know, it really is an eye opener. And It was a really good experience.
Can I ask you, why on earth, like, what led you to go, oh, I want to be in the military as an 18-year-old girl?
Okay, you're going to laugh. But you remember the show Jag?
Yes. Oh, my God.
The original one with Meg, not with Matt.
I never watched it, but yes, when you said it, I had to like go back into the 90s, into my brain. It took a little while. Okay. Yes.
So, I mean, there's a couple of reasons, but I loved the show Jag. And then I did cadets when I was a teenager and, you know, all these kind of reasons led to wanting to do that. Plus, of course, because I went to the academy and I was lucky enough to go to the Defence Academy, uni is paid for. So, as you know, coming from a small town and not having a lot of study options at the uni that would have been close and affordable, then that just became, you know, a goal to be able to go to the academy and have
all
those experiences.
Do you come from a military family?
No, not at all.
How bizarre.
Not at all. Yeah. But I did catch the travel bug kind of early. I had never been on a plane till I was 16 because, you know, living
in Tassie. Yeah, I know. I hadn't either. I think I was 18, actually. I think the first flight I ever caught was to Schoolies Week on the Gold Coast.
Oh, there you go. Well, I tell my kids how lucky they are. They can't even fathom that someone would never have been on a plane.
Yeah, so
when I was 16, I went to Japan for a year and as an exchange student. And so when I came back, I had to do year 11 and 12, and luckily I got to do it just in 1 year because Tassie has this funny system. You can get away with it. But I just needed to go on more adventures. Do you know what I mean? When you get that bite of the bug. And so this, you know, JAG was definitely the starting point as a 13-year-old. What's not to love about, you know, the uniform and whatnot. But, yeah, and then it progressed from there and it became this bigger kind of adventure that I wanted to pursue that ticked lots of boxes.
Yeah, right. And so 13 years is a lifetime in terms of careers anyway.
It is. That is true.
And what, like, led you to leave?
Okay, so I say 13 years, but to be honest, I was working part-time for 6 of those years because the Air Force is actually fantastic, or they were really good to me. I fell slightly accidentally pregnant with my eldest.
I know how that goes.
Yeah. My mom still asserts that it was on purpose, subconsciously. But I was 3 weeks out from a 6-month deployment to go back to the Middle East. Wow. And so the previous 2 years, I had barely seen my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time. I was always on training exercises. You know, the constant tempo is pretty high. And then I had this 6-month deployment coming up and I was dreading it because, you know, I was just totally burnt out and fatigued. And then fell pregnant. Yeah.
And then was totally burnt out and fatigued.
Yeah.
For the rest of your life.
So, yeah, exactly. That was nothing. So my path certainly changed at that point. However, the military was fantastic in terms of, I was really lucky that I worked in a field that was really understaffed. So it was in their best interest to be able to provide work opportunities for me. So I had my daughter, I took, you know, the maternity leave, and I went back part-time and stayed part-time for the rest of my career. And they were great about that. They, you know, basically said, we're happy to facilitate whatever hours suit you. You don't have to go away and do courses. You don't have to go on deployments. And they let me co-locate with my husband as well because he was military. So that was great on the one hand, but then this is what also led me to getting out. So working part-time is fantastic, and that I wasn't willing to sacrifice time away from my kids. You know, I did go on a couple of courses, but if I had wanted to be promoted with my peers and keep getting those exciting opportunities, I would have had to go and do the deployments and get the leadership opportunities. So even though in my job they were great, like I was still able to manage teams and they didn't give me sort of side jobs. They let me really sink my teeth into my jobs. But because I wasn't willing to leave my kids, I was stagnant in terms of promotion and opportunities, which for some people, that's awesome. Like that is the absolute best of both worlds. But for me, because I'm hungry and I'm driven, like it just killed me.
Yeah.
You know, because
mundane,
I wanted
same thing every
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's when I decided, and I kind of fell into having a business at that point because I had a few opportunities. So then I became a boudoir photographer, which is a totally natural progression from being in the military.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and then that became Click Love Grow, which is my online photography courses, simply because being military, I knew we'd move. So having a location-based business was great and I loved it, but I knew that long-term that I would need something that would allow me to travel.
Yeah. So you live in the States now.
Yes.
Is your husband American or is he an Aussie as well?
No, he's an Aussie. So he has just discharged from the Air Force as well.
Right.
He now works for an American company doing the same job that he was trained to do in the military, and now he works for a private American company that builds airplanes.
Yeah, right. Okay. And so you both were from Adelaide?
No.
You're from Tassie.
Tassie. Yeah. He grew up in England and then moved to Brisbane when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
But we met at the Defence Academy together. So we were dirty fratters because you're not supposed to have relationships there. And so we've been together since then. So we've always sort of, whoever's got a great posting or been offered a good opportunity, we would sort of follow that person. And then we lived in the States maybe 5 years ago. He got to do a really awesome training course here for a year. So the military flew us all over and I worked from home during that year. And that's when I was able to pursue photography because I was home and I kind of had little kids and I had the time finally to do it. And then we went back to Adelaide, but we'd never been there before. So we kind of, the military moves us around a lot. So Adelaide was the last place that we lived.
Yeah, right. And you were there building your boudoir photography business for four years?
And I literally left it at a point where I was like, yes, I've made it. You know, because when you're not from a town, and Adelaide is beautiful, I love it, but, you know, it's kind of a smaller city. Everyone knows everyone. So I felt like, you know, it definitely took that time to break into, especially the wedding industry, and get to the point where it was very sustainable and I had built a name for myself and it was going really well. And then we left.
Yeah. Did you always have an interest in photography, or was it something?
No.
No? So how did that happen?
Well,
how did you decide to do boudoir photography?
Well, it was very much, there was two parts. I say no that I wasn't interested, but I remember as a teen, I would go through magazines and rip out, do you remember those hair colorings that you, like fudge?
Oh, yeah.
Coloring.
Yeah, I was just talking about it yesterday, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I dyed my hair bright red, but it didn't quite work. And my hairdresser was asking me if I had been any other colors before. And I think like in about 2003, I like halved my hair, did the top part black, bleached the bottom half. I had really long hair and I dyed it pink. And it was with fudge. One time it was a wedding and I had to go to a wedding. So I thought, I'll just fudge my hair so it's like, you know, bright. And so I just did the whole head because the top was black. I thought, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
I got in the shower to wash it off, and usually I'd wash it off in the sink, but I got in the shower and pretty much my whole body was dyed hot pink.
Oh, no.
And I live like in a hot climate. So, you know, I had to wear like dress kind of thing. And I had like trickles down my chest, like in between my boobs of just like hot pink. And then I had to bleach my whole body.
Oh, no.
So I remember fudge. Yes.
Oh, okay. You have a personal acquaintance with fudge.
Yeah.
Well, so they had amazing visual ads, like full page ads, you know, in Dolly. And Girlfriend magazine. And I used to go through and rip out ads that would, because I just love gorgeous imagery and visuals. And I used to collect postcards. You know how you go to cafes?
Yes,
I think that was just starting to be a thing when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And so my wall was covered in amazing visual imagery. But I think because I was so determined on getting into ADFA and ticking all the boxes like academically, that I never pursued any creative sort of interests or allowed myself to pursue any creative interests, because it's all about, right, you know.
Yeah.
And then in the military, you know, we don't really pursue creative interests. But this is what I found, that so many women that I talk to have done the corporate type career or the structured set engineering, IT, all those kind of things. And then they either have kids or they get into their early 30s. And then suddenly it's, you know, this self-discovery of what people really love. So for me, that was definitely the case. Like when I found photography, it wasn't just, oh, I want to take cute photos of my kids. That's what it started off as. But then as I fell into it, it just became this thing that actually resonated personally with me as almost being a life stage of helping me break free of something and discovering another part of myself.
Mm.
So that's why I love it now.
And so...
Boudoir. We were going to talk about boudoir.
Yeah. I okay. Like, so what, like... I'm kind of intrigued because actually my background is photography. So I was a photographer. I went to uni, I studied media arts and photography at the time seemed to be the easiest way for me to make a living. So I worked as a photographer. My first job was at Madame Tussauds. I worked as a photographer there and I used to shoot weddings and, yeah, but then for me, it was just way too much pressure because those were back in film days and I ran a lab too. So I worked in a Kodak lab and I'd run, you know, do shoots on the side, but it was film and there was so much stress around it because I worked in a lab. I saw how many films got fucked up in the machine, So, and what if I miss the moment and, you know, so it was just too much stress for me and I ended up. Yeah, not like I'd do the odd friend's wedding or something like that, but I just don't really do it anymore. So I'm interested about boudoir photography. Okay. Like, are you doing like women in lingerie or? And so what kind of like women would come to you?
Well, this is the thing. So many women. And for me, boudoir wasn't or still isn't really huge in Australia. But because I was living in the States for that short period of time, it's really popular over here. So when I went back to Adelaide and I was working part-time in the RAF, setting up my photography business on the side, I started out, you know, doing families and kids, but there's, you know, a lot of people that do that. So it was very much initially a business decision. Okay, I'm going to niche down. I'm going to offer boudoir. And also boudoir is a little bit harder to establish business-wise because you need locations, you need hair and makeup. Logistically, it's a bit more of a challenge. So I could set myself apart and do it properly and do it well. And then I just fell in love with it. So it's interesting when you say what kind of women. So a lot of brides came and got it done and they would do it. And it was easy to market to brides because there's a reason and it makes sense, you know, to give. And I would say, you know, surprise your groom with a cheeky gift or the cheekiest gift to give is, you know, boudoir. And so brides would get it done a few months before their wedding because they look and feel fantastic. They've been getting excited for the wedding and it's this one-off celebration of them before the wedding. So they were very much my clients who were sort of late 20s, early 30s, and that was, you know, a specific reason. But then my next biggest clients were new mums.
Yeah, right.
And they would not even probably think that they would want to get it done until they came across boudoir. And it's so sweet because all my clients said exactly the same thing. They're like, Louise, I have never done anything like this before because it's a really intimate thing. Yeah. You know, they're putting all this trust in me.
I mean, I don't even, my husband hardly ever sees me in nice underwear, so.
Well, yeah, so lots of new mums would get it done to sort of celebrate their bodies, just to feel sexy again and to feel comfortable in their skin. And then I would get lots of women late 50s, early 60s, again, who were like, fuck it, I just want to feel and look hot. Like it's hidden under here, but I'm going to let it out. Yeah. So they were always amazingly fun sessions as well because they actually had this fantastic inner confidence that almost couldn't come out until they were given permission.
Yeah.
And they would, because I would always chat to my clients about what to bring to the photo shoots, and I would give ideas and suggestions. And I would love it when someone would come in, you know, ponytail, trackies, feeling really shy, but then they open the suitcase and there's like a full length body stocking and all these amazing, you know, sexy out there.
Yeah, wow. Fun.
And it's like, cool, you know, and we'd have lots of fun with them. But so business decision was that I wanted to niche, but then, you know, I really fell in love with it, and the relationship that I would get to have with my yeah. clients and taking them through this experience and the fact that they would trust me. And yeah, but it is women in their lingerie. It's really classy. It's very much taken from a women's perspective. It's artistic. It's always subtle, sexy. It's not men's magazine yeah. type images.
Yeah.
And sometimes we would do really tasteful artistic nudes. And I had a couple of really popular shots that I would always do with my clients. And sometimes it would be funny because I would suggest it, say, look, okay, this is an image I'm thinking of. Let's just see, you know, and they'd be like, oh, okay. But it was at the end, so they trusted me by then. And guaranteed that would be the last page of every client's album, was this one particular shot that was just yeah. this gorgeous side silhouette of their breasts. And, yeah, it was just really flattering. And
yeah, and wow. pretty. So, wow. Yeah, so what a contrast. That's such a contrast. So a question for you. Okay, so you went into boudoir photography. You were in mm-hmm. a relatively new town, didn't know many people. Yeah. How did you market? Yeah. How did you market your business, and how did you build kind of clientele? Because I imagine that boudoir photography is something probably people only do once or twice.
Yes, definitely. Yes. So I very much threw myself into the wedding industry in terms of marketing, because I felt that that bridal boudoir was very niche and was probably the most effective way to get in front of lots of women. So I did a lot of expos, you know, literally standing there with all my images and my albums and a big smile on my face and people tentatively coming up like, yeah. So have you heard of boudoir? and thrusting albums at them, you know, to show them the product and what the images were. And even then some people would get confused and they're like, oh, you know, and I would explain what it was and the experience. So, yeah, the wedding, going through the wedding industry, so I did a lot of expos, women's expos. I totally love networking and doing – I was so – like Adelaide has amazing women and we have beautiful, beautiful business networking groups, and so I met lots of people through that. But, yeah, predominantly through the wedding channels, and then it spread from there. So I – did a few other bits and pieces to try and get in front of people in Adelaide.
Yeah, cool. Cool.
Yeah, and word of mouth. So brides would tell all their friends at that stage.
That's how I think that's how definitely when I was shooting weddings, that's how it happened. You'd go to a wedding and you'd shoot it and there'd be a couple of brides there. You know, there's always people about to get married at a wedding. So
exactly.
Being on the job was actually the best advertising that I could have had anyway. So I imagine that these women would have come in feeling probably like me, a bit frumpy and, you know, extremely nervous.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you would obviously build trust and...
Yes.
How would you encourage them to, like, because basically what you're teaching them is self-love, isn't it? Like, that's what you're really absolutely. Selling is self-love. So how did you encourage that within them? How did you get them to drop their barriers a bit and
their knickers, literally?
Yeah.
Well, I would always talk to my clients, say, the week before, and I would just be really honest. I'm like, well, how are you feeling? You know, this is, and then I would tell them exactly how it's going to work, exactly what they can expect. My hair and makeup team is going to take care of them. So I was very reassuring that they could totally leave it all up to me. Everything was going to be taken care of. They just had to turn up, pour them a glass of champagne. And even if it was the 10 o'clock juice. In the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so I just would let them know through, you know, chatting to them was really important. Yeah. And then again on the day, I would just make sure that I did a lot of talking so that, you know, there wasn't any awkward silence. And I would explain to them. So I had a certain structure in how we'd shoot. And so we'd start off with the beauty shots. So I'd say, bring a couple of like cocktail dresses And I would say, we'll start off with some beauty shots. This is what we're going to do. You know, if I'm shooting and I'm not saying anything, don't worry. I will tell you if we need to do something differently. And I basically say, I will tell you exactly what to do, how to move, how to stand the whole shoot. Don't worry about what else is happening. You know, I've got this. So, and then we would just chat because a lot of them were mums. You know, we'd talk about that kind of stuff and whatever they wanted to talk about, we'd just chat. So
yeah, right.
I think that just hopefully disarmed them and made them feel comfortable.
Yeah, wow. From there, like, what led you to start Click Grow Love?
Click Love Grow.
Oh, yeah. Other way around. Sorry. Yes.
That's all right. Lots of people say that. Like, maybe I named it wrong.
No.
Well,
I remember I had no sleep last night, so I'm running on empty.
So that is a really good question. I was building my boudoir photography business. I was still in the Air Force. And this is, I can talk about the meltdown if you want.
Yes, but let's go there.
Okay.
I love a good meltdown.
There's the inevitable meltdown story. So I was working part-time in the Air Force, building my business, which was really growing. It was getting legs. And then I was immersing myself in learning about marketing. So I really wanted to continue to grow my business. And this is where the inevitable meltdown happens, because I'm working in my job and telling myself that I'm not doing my job properly because I'm so focused on growing my business and that I'm not giving it what I should. And then, of course, I'm getting up at 6 a.m. I'm answering client emails. I'm packaging products and I'm thinking, oh, I'm not even running my business properly. Then I drive to work with my husband and say, I don't know what's for dinner. I'm like the shittest wife ever because I'm not. And basically, I thought I was screwing everything up because, you know, you're being pulled in so many directions, and I was so excited about my business taking off. So that's when I found myself in a big heap in the doctor's office. And I remember I've always had like kind of a sore neck from, you know, carrying packs in the military and breastfeeding babies. And I went to the doctor and I was like, oh, hey, I'd like to get a referral to see the physio, please, you know. My neck. He's like, there's nothing wrong with your neck. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you have to stop all the negative self-talk and take some pressure off yourself.
Was this a GP?
And I only met this man once.
Oh my God. And
was he
a doctor?
Yes.
Oh my God.
He was a really old doctor in his 60s or 70s. He said, let me write down some names of some books for you about self-talk.
Oh my God.
And
that guy's an angel.
I know. And I was like, you don't understand. I'm the world's most bubbly, optimistic person ever. I don't negative self-talk. But it was a real awakening because I was. I'm shit at I can't even provide dinner and, oh, I'm not doing my job properly. So it was this huge moment where I just was, you know, something has to give. And thankfully, and I was getting a little bit of anxiety, which is totally against my personality. And I had to give up either coffee or alcohol. So that was a really easy decision.
Yeah.
One of those can go. But my husband, this is very against his nature, but he said to me one day, you have to quit your job and do what you love and follow your dreams. And, you know, one of those movie moments. And totally was left field, but he could clearly see, because I wasn't doing a very good job of articulating this meltdown. I was stuck in the middle of it. And I still couldn't leave the military though. This is it. I was so attached and so afraid of leaving.
Do you think it was because it was defining a bit of who you were, or?
Oh, absolutely. And when you join at 18, that's everything you know, the structure of it. It's so dependable and reliable and provides the, you know, left and right and arc of how you live your life.
Yeah.
I
see jobs as relationships kind of thing. So, you know, it's like if you met someone at 18 and you got married at 18 and, you know, at 32, you're still with that person because of the comfort and the blah, blah, blah and the, you know, but there's not the spark there. It's kind of, similar.
Even though logically and rationally I was getting this fantastic taste of what was on the outside, you know, when all your networks of friends are in the military and So I was like, no, can't quit. Took long service leave and I was working in my business, which was such a treat full time. And I just had the most amazing month. Like, you know, so many bookings and everything just started to take off. And so I thought, okay, this is, there was a quote that I remember, and I wish that I could remember the quote because I'm sure it's really awesome. But it basically said, until you burn the bridge, you have no reason to hustle.
That is
so real what it is.
But we get the premise.
Exactly.
So until you let go, you can't move forward, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that really resonated. And that's how I ended up sort of leaving the military, even though even then I still didn't think that I could quit. But because I was going back to the original question, because I was learning about marketing, and specifically I was thrown into the world of online marketing and saw all this potential and opportunity, knowing too in the back of my mind that we would leave and that, you know, my husband would be pursuing job opportunities that weren't in Adelaide, the opening to create something that was based online and facilitated me to leverage myself a bit more, that's where Click Love Grow fell into place. And again, you know, boudoir was very much no one else was offering it. Click Love Grow, I had seen other types of online photography communities for women in America, but I felt like there was nothing like that in Australia to start with. But also, there was nothing that took people from the very beginning. You know, oh, I'm the mom. I just like paid for this ridiculously expensive camera. Why do my photos look shit? How do I figure it out from that very basic point? Instead of attracting people who were already in love with photography, I wanted to create something that was even the step before that.
Yeah. We used to, I used to work at a big camera store in Melbourne, and I used to run digital photography courses back when digital photography was just starting out, like the late 90s. Yeah, and that would go through the very, very basics. So in terms of Click Love Grow, is that does it tie in with the boudoir stuff? Is there an element of that, or is it just like not at all? So you've moved away completely from the boudoir?
A little bit. I do a little bit of online mentoring for people who are photographers that would like to branch out into the boudoir field because, and I get really excited about it. It's such a niche opportunity. And it's just that the business model is a little bit tricky to figure out initially, you know, logistically with hair and makeup artists and shooting locations. And there's definitely a need for it because I was based in Adelaide, but I could, you know, I was quite easily traveling to shoot in, you know, Melbourne, and I'd go home to Tasmania and I'd always be able to get bookings because no one else was really like pursuing it in the same kinds of way. So, and there are definitely people who offer boudoir and are awesome, but I found that opportunity, you know, that there were definitely clients interested. So I do a little bit of one-on-one mentoring, but no, Click Love Grow itself is not boudoir.
So it's like a photography 101?
Yeah, it is. So I have two different courses. It's very much aimed at women who have a camera, and my signature program is about women learning to use their digital cameras to take images they love. So whether it's of their kids, their travels, their baking, you know, finding that real creative spark that gets them excited, and then bringing them into a community of other women who are equally as excited about all of that. And the community aspect is a really big part of my courses, I think. You know, it's not just the course content. It's, I think, demystifying some of the technical terms of photography because there's so much photography stuff out there.
You know, it's the
YouTube
same
videos.
Yeah, I've picked two industries that are full of tech nerds, you know, like photography. Oh, God. Yeah, I remember when I was working at this big camera store in Melbourne, it was full of amazing photographers, and a couple of them have gone on to quite a few have gone on to greatness. One of my friends from there was a guy called Justin Riddler, and I'm hoping to get him on here. He's an incredible fashion photographer.
How exciting.
You know, and he was lovely, but man, there were so many wankers in there that just wanted to like pick apart your photo, the technical this and the technical that. Yeah. And it's like, for me, it was always about capturing the essence of that, you know, technical second But, you know, you can capture a technically brilliant image, but if you haven't caught the essence of who that person
is, then it's bullshit. And the moment and...
Yeah.
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 Definitely.
And then, you know, voiceover. It's like, oh, God, more tech wankers. They want to talk about... Oh, it's full of it. Full of it, you know? Oh, so which funny. Mic and which preamp set up and, you know, what... Of course. What,
they're always the gear. Yeah.
Yeah, gear junkies.
And all the gear, no idea.
Yeah.
Those people.
Yeah. Okay, so what I want to ask you about creating your online business is what would be your major lessons, I guess, in having created that? Have you had any major fuck-ups that have taught you really imperative lessons?
Yes.
Sweet.
Except I'm kind of in the midst of them. They're a bit raw.
Oh, really?
Well, I think I was really lucky. My business really took off. And I had amazing growth and put a lot of pressure on myself because when you've had a taste of that growth, you want it to keep continuing. And I'm also, I think this is a little bit of my military background. I'm so obsessed with trying to be professional. So for me, I got to a point where I really started to need to share more of myself and more of my story because that's so important for online marketing and people resonating with your brand. And I just found that so difficult. I hit this huge block in terms of I can't put myself out there. I can't share aspects of I wanted to present a professional front because that was my training and that was my background. Mm. And so I found one area that I really had to navigate in the online world and trying to really connect with my audience was breaking through that a little bit. And I still feel like I'm getting there. I don't think I have nailed that yet.
That's definitely an ongoing journey because the being seen thing, it's having spoken to every woman that I've interviewed so far, that's been an issue for them. Whether it's being seen as in your case, sharing who you are and like what I call letting the guru guard down a bit, or whether it's been more literal, like actually being seen, like putting yourself out there in any respect. And a lot of people struggle with that from the tooting their own horn front. And that's like, I think that comes down to part of it being an Australian, where we have this whole tall poppy syndrome and we don't want to stand up too tall or shine too bright because it's intimidating to other people. But if you can do that in authenticity, then it's not intimidating really because, you know, I feel like it's you're like a lighthouse and you're shining a light for other people to do the same, you know, whereas we're kind of as Aussies taught, you know, I don't know. Don't
hide it behind a bushel a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like be humble, but like humble into the point where we actually need to beat ourselves up publicly.
Of course.
You know, so that people feel okay about themselves.
Absolutely.
But really, when you feel okay about yourself and you are okay about yourself then and you're open about that, then I think like you encourage other people to do the same. So I think it's really important to know that although it can be difficult to allow yourself to be seen, it's ultimately the best gift of all, not just to yourself but the people around you, you know?
Absolutely. And I feel like we judge ourselves so much more harshly because we appreciate it when other people do that.
Yeah.
And we value it and we, you know, really enjoy that they're being so open and sharing. But when it comes to doing it ourselves, we think, oh, no, they're just going to think that we're...
Yeah. And I think, like, let's face it, there are people who are, like, I've always been an open book. People have constantly said to me all my life, too much information, too much information, you know. But there are other people that, but then I'm also completely introverted in some respects, terrible in groups. So, you know, I think, yeah, there's like, I don't know, everyone has their little thing, don't they?
They do. They do. And I, like, I'm a total groups person. I will go to the opening of an envelope if there's a glass of champagne and an invitation. I will be there.
Yeah. And I'm the opposite. I'm quite fine, you know, taking a video of me taking a shit, but but then going to an event.
See, that terrifies me. Yeah.
Funny. But it's just different ways of being seen, isn't it?
It is, definitely, definitely. Yeah. And I feel like the military too was a huge part of that because taking that Australian, you know, culture even further, the military is very much like that. Like, don't think you're anything special. Don't think that we were, you know, consistently told that through our training. And as a woman, being in a male-dominated environment, like, some of those guys are assholes, really. Most of them are amazing and fantastic, but it only takes a few of them of, you know, oh, you only got that opportunity because you're the token chick. Oh, you didn't really earn that. Oh, you know that you don't. Do you know what I mean? And so I feel like that has been a big lesson in starting this business, was working through that real personal. I didn't really think it was even an issue, but when you're faced with it, you're like, wow, I really do have some judgment type things that I need to push through, and self-confidence type things. So that has been one of the big lessons. And the other one has been learning to appreciate the success, because I physically find it so difficult to celebrate any type of success because it's not good enough yet. It's not there yet. It's, what do you mean I just had this fantastic launch? Like, I didn't get it bigger, you know. And so moving to the States, this has been one of the most difficult things that we've done. And I think it's been so difficult because we didn't expect it to be difficult, because my husband and I have moved a lot. My kids are so easygoing. They have moved so many times. We're really prepared. And when we got here, it was like, wow, we had a fantastic lifestyle in Adelaide. You know, what have we done? You know, have we? And then I was kind of unexpectedly, but not prepared to fall pregnant, and I was vomiting, and I wasn't, do you know what I mean? And you don't know people, and our apartment was flea infested.
Oh, God.
The weather was horrible.
Yeah.
So I've kind of just come through this whole literal journey that's quite raw even now.
Yeah.
And I think my husband and I have been chatting. We're like, wow, we really, you know, this is a really big life lesson. We're happy to embrace it, and we're happy to make the most of being here. But we, but I think we can kind of sit down and have some chats about, you know, what we've just been through, and why did we find this so difficult? You know, this upheaval, which we'd have wanted to happen and been pursuing for quite some time. So it made us definitely evaluate the things that were important. And part of that is the whole, you know, why was I not celebrating the success that I had as I was reaching those milestones instead of beating myself up about it? Yeah. And a lot of it is comparing as well, you know, of being absorbed in these, you know, environments where people are doing all these amazing things.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like when you're in groups, entrepreneurial groups like we are, and you're surrounded by people who are achieving, it can make you feel kind of inadequate at times. It's kind of like a double-edged sword, really. It's you know, it's fantastic because you're surrounded by incredible, like-minded, inspiring people, but at the same token, that can be disempowering a little bit too, if you allow it to.
Yes, yeah. And if you're stuck in that comparison itis.
Yeah. Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch. Biggest fear.
My biggest fear is vulnerability, is being vulnerable.
Yeah.
So I'm reading Brené Brown's book.
Ah, yes. Daring Greatly. I'm one of those people who has 10 million books, and I open them and read the first few pages, and then I just, you know, sad.
It's been sitting there a while.
Yeah. biggest struggle.
Biggest struggle. I really feel on the spot.
Ah, interesting. Because isn't it interesting that you're struggling with these questions?
Yeah.
Because you're about to read Brené Brown's Daring Greatly.
Yes, I know. My biggest struggle is verbalizing, articulating, and opening up about struggle. I deny struggle. I am always a half glass full, rose-tinted glasses, trying to find the silver lining. But sometimes if you don't let it out, it's going to bubble up.
Yeah.
So I find it really difficult to say I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
So that's my struggle.
Yeah, that's actually a really good one. Okay, so, you know, we all have the evil bitch. After this one, I'll change that to some silver lining stuff, I promise. So we all have there's nothing better than being put on the spot sometimes. We all have, like, this kind of evil bitch that lives inside our heads, right? And she tells us a whole bunch of untruths. What does your evil bitch, what's the most common recurring negative thought that you hear yourself telling yourself?
That I should be doing more. I'm constantly telling myself that I should be producing more, achieving more, that I should be closer to my family so that I can participate more. It's, you know, and this is kind of relevant to where I am, you know, right at this moment, because I'm feeling very geographically isolated. Mm. The comparison I made to my husband the other day, I was having a wallowing, you know, moment of hormonal pregnant lady craziness. You know how some people like eat the ice cream tub and then feel completely pathetic and self-loathing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that problem. I can eat ice cream guilt-free. Mine will be the wallowing. I will be completely unproductive and play Candy Crush or solitaire and wallow. And then the self-loathing is about the fact that I was so unproductive and that I wallowed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So that's my evil bitch is like, get your ass off the couch.
Yeah.
And go and achieve what you should be achieving.
Cool.
Yeah. But generally, I'm pretty self-forgiving. I kind of find that my natural tendency is to not, you know,
dwell on thing. It.
But again, that comes back to the meltdown. Like, your dinners aren't good enough. You're not giving your clients enough. You're not. Yeah.
So it's like about being enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Whole theme. Okay. So now, one more difficult question.
Okay.
What has been, over your whole career thus far, what has been your biggest lesson?
I think my biggest lesson has been to back myself and have that self-confidence to be me and present my offerings. And this even goes back to the Air Force. If I was to tell myself, you know, in the early stages of my career, the things that would cripple me is that I was briefing big teams of experienced people. And so the self-doubt was just, oh my goodness, you know, really terrifying. And that, I think that motherhood has really been a huge factor in building my self-confidence, because if you can handle that shit, I don't care what anyone else thinks about, you know, other professional aspects. But yeah, I'm slowly forging my way to living the outcome of that lesson.
Yeah. Okay. So these hopefully will be a little easier.
Okay.
In terms of, let's just go your whole career thus far, what have been the absolute highlights, the things that have made you, you know, feel like you're completely on purpose and living a good life?
I have a lot of Air Force highlights, and all of them relate to being part of a team. So when we've been involved in humanitarian and repatriation, aeromedical evacuations, supporting Australians being brought home from overseas when they've been injured in terrorist attacks and things, sleeping on a floor on a stretcher next to my desk because we're working around the clock to support teams of getting those things done, are always highlights in my mind, because you're part of something so much bigger and it's so satisfying, and it's, you know, you're really delivering something that feels meaningful.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of, thankfully, Air Force moments like that where that whole team environment really stands out.
I guess you're really living a greater purpose then, aren't you, because working in a humanitarian kind of position, aren't you?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes. And it is, I mean, it's at the time, you know, it's hard and it's, but there is no complaining. Like, everyone else there is equally sleep deprived and away from their families and stressed, but there's no alternative. It just gets done because it needs to be. So that will always stay with me as real career highlights. And I guess having my kids even though I absolutely adore the path that my life took, that was something that I really gave up, I guess, because I wasn't willing to go away and do those things anymore. Mm. And lots of mothers do, and I absolutely take my hat off to them, and it's awesome. But me personally,
yeah,
I didn't do that.
Yeah.
So that's that. And then the other one, or the other highlight, I guess, is literally having sales. You know, creating a product, putting it out there, and then having sales that absolutely exceeded anything that was my expectation. Like, it's such an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lisa Corduff and I. We're talking about her journey, like of her first 6 months business. And just the sales thing, the adrenaline rush. And I think it's the fact that other people believe in you. It's like
But you also feel like, I've done it. It's working and people are really excited. And then the other thing is, I've lately been so excited about, I have an advanced course, which is what some of the students come through to afterwards. And just the passion of them being so excited about something that I'm excited about and sharing their achievements, that, you know, always, and doing the group coaching calls with them, you know, you get on live and you're chatting and, that always gives me a real high as well, because I love the teaching aspect and being connected with them.
Here's one for you. This will be the last question. Okay. What do you do to look after you, like in a self-care, self-love kind of way?
Okay. I do try really hard to be kind to myself. And to be honest, I feel really spoiled with this pregnancy because my two older girls are in school and I work for myself. So lots of people, and last time when I was pregnant, I had toddlers, you know, or a baby as well, and a job. And
I can't even imagine. Like, I feel really lucky too, because, you know, with Mabel, she was my first and maybe my only, after last night, definitely my only.
She doesn't sleep,
But, you know, I've worked for myself for 10 years. So, and I've also gotten through that point where, I don't know if you've had this in your own business, but there were points there where I went from a full-time job into self-employment, and I used to beat myself up about, oh, you're not working hard enough, and, oh, you can't go out to have lunch with the ladies. Like, you know, that kind of stuff. I used to never do any of that stuff because I should have been working. It was 9 to 5, you know, and there's that whole barrier there. So it was a good thing that for me, I was well and truly on the other side of that. And so I really embraced my pregnancy, and I had massages and, you know, and went for long uninterrupted walks on the beach and just really soaked up every part of pregnancy, because it's such a special time, because after that baby comes, it's so not relaxing anymore. And I used to get the shits, you know, like you used to get the shits that people would say that your life is over. Like, it's not, it's far from over. Like, being a mum is magical, but being pregnant, there's something really special about it, you know?
Definitely. Well, I am because my other pregnancies, you know, I was working and had my other daughter. I'm definitely appreciating that aspect, even though I feel, I'm so far away and I haven't established my networks and I totally miss all my friends. And so I'm finding that part of it quite difficult working from home, because it's quite isolating.
Yes.
But pregnancy-wise, now that I've stopped vomiting, I have been taking walks. We live really close to the beach, so I'm making sure that I get outside. I've been going for massages. I have a cleaning lady.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't beat myself up about going out for lunches. But I just really love a quiet cup of tea on the couch and a nap. All of those things. And then the last 4 years, I've had a live-in au pair.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I felt very spoiled in terms of having extra support with my kids, you know, to allow me to do the self-care things, but also not have the guilt attached with juggling my kids.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug. Shout whatever you want to from the mountaintops.
Talk about how amazing my pregnancy breasts are.
Maybe you should take some selfie boudoir photos.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually surprised breasts only came up now. Normally, maybe it's because I've stopped shooting boudoir, but normally I talk about boobs all the time. Yeah.
I actually went and bought 3 new bras yesterday because my boobs had gone, my bra side had gone from a 16G.
Wow.
Back down to what I got fitted yesterday, and now I'm a 12F. So it's like, you know, they've like kind of, I don't know, they're certainly not what they used to be. Let's just say
Well, breastfeeding does, you know, or a pregnancy does. And I even said to, because my boobs are amazing, my husband is, I was like, are they really that different? Like, he's like, oh, yeah.
They're back to perky 20-year-old boobs.
I think, I always say at about the 2-year, 3-year mark, your boobs do come back a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. They fill out a bit more.
Oh, okay, cool. So they won't be like a saggy ball sack. That's what they feel
do.
Like.
I think they do come back a little bit.
Cool.
Okay, the plug. Do you notice the resistance to the plug? Yeah. I just put up breasts to avoid plugging myself.
Okay. You were just plugging a different aspect of yourself.
I was. Yeah. One that's maybe not available for sale, yeah, but for the right price.
Classic.
Okay, so Click Love Grow offers online photography courses for women. So whether it's someone who owns a fancy camera and wants to take photos of their kids, or one of my programs is about helping women who have businesses and they share their products or their businesses online. And one thing I get really excited about is that images are the perfect storytelling medium.
Totally.
So we can take all the obvious types of photos in our business, you know, if we have a physical product or, you know, we're baking a cake and sharing a recipe, but there's so much more that we can share with our audiences and connect with them and engage through photography as a visual medium. So all the behind the scenes stories and sharing aspects of your personality and, you know, sharing color and all these types of visual pieces that we can use online in our businesses to share the product, but to share stories. And then, of course, we can use them for visual marketing pieces. So the program that I offer is an photography course for online business. And so it takes people through how to use their cameras, you know, how to take great photos, what kind of lighting is really flattering to use. But then we also talk about how we can use those images. So lots of ideas on taking those photos and then telling stories with them.
Cool. And the website?
Is clicklovegrow.com.
Cool.
And I have a really fun Instagram challenge, which I just put together, and 500 people came through it and had heaps and heaps of fun with it. So it's still available. It's free 7 days of mini lessons. You can go through the lessons either with an iPhone or a fancy camera. You can challenge yourself to use your camera. But each day is an awesome, like, bite-sized lesson of something that you can start doing straight away to take better photos. And then you can share it with the hashtags and see what everyone else has been sharing for that challenge each day to go with the lesson.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
When it comes to photography, is just to keep taking photos. And one of the best things we can do is just pay attention. So when you see color and you see shape and you see light falling in a beautiful pattern, just grab your iPhone, take pictures of it, and start sharing, because not only are you getting images out there to help you tell those portions of your story, but you're also building your style and finding things to appreciate every day that you wouldn't normally see. So that's the hidden benefit of photography and something that we can all do with our phones.
Seriously, thank you so much. This has been uber fun. I've loved it. Like, yeah. See ya. Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.